Chapter 2. The Russians are coming. In the meantime, confusion spread throughout the country. Soldiers, refugees, spies, crowded streets, the downed airplane on the edge of town, the pilots who bailed out, and the big news, the Russians are invading Poland. Poland was divided again, and once more seemed to be lost. The only topic of the day was, how and where will the border between Russia and Germany, i.e. between the Russian and the German armies, be established? Would they go back to the old Curzon line on the Bug River? Or would the border follow the Vistula River? Radzin lies between the Bug and Vistula rivers. In the town, unrest, tension, and excitement prevailed. There were heated discussions, particularly among our Jewish boys, since our futures were at stake. Hitler and Nazism, or freedom under communism? Under the Nazis there was only complete oppression and slavery. On the other hand, we expected communism to be the complete liberation of all working and peace-loving people. All the idealistic slogans and phrases which were spoken and written about communism would now become reality. Our Zionist dreams had proved to be illusory and seemed to have been outdated by historical events. Jews with a communist past, especially those who were imprisoned for small crimes like hanging red flags from the electrical cables in town, or putting up communist posters, believed that with the entry of the Russians, the long-awaited day of their liberation would arrive. Soon news arrived that outposts of the Red Army had been seen in towns and villages nearby. The jubilation was great, especially among us Jews. The roads in and out of the town were, however, still full of the rest of the Polish army, cavalry, infantry, and artillery. There was constant movement in the streets. In the nearby woods and villages, the rest of the Polish army was regrouped and drawn together. Finally. On the edge of town, some Russian trucks with soldiers of the Red Army appeared. The local communists, with their red armbands, welcomed their Russian comrades. They received rifles from them and proceeded to take control of the town. All the dreams of the Red Revolution, it seemed, would come true within minutes. The great liberation had begun. The remaining police officers were stripped of their power, and public offices were taken over. Enemies of communism and anti-Semites were quickly prosecuted and relieved of their duties. The majority of them, however, had already gone into hiding out of fear. The joy of many older Jews of the upper class and that of the Zionists was restrained. The majority, however, were glad to have witnessed that day, the day on which the promise of the Red Revolution would be fulfilled. The poor would become rich, the hungry satiated, and the oppressed free. Their reaction was understandable in light of their difficult life among the Poles. In the town, the chaos increased. New military units arrived and then disappeared. Some soldiers deserted and dressed as civilians. Artillery fire could be heard from far away and nearby. The wearers of red armbands, most of them young and Jewish, were conspicuous in the town as they raced back and forth on confiscated bicycles or in coaches drawn by fine horses. I observed all this with respect, and perhaps with some jealousy, too. I felt like someone who had bet on the wrong horse. After some consideration, I found an excuse in my lack of experience at age 17. I also was consoled by the recognition that I was pink, although it was clear that only true red was acceptable at that moment. To play an important part, I would have had to have been older and redder. I regretted that. Among the new rulers with the red armbands, I recognized Abraham Pincus, who was their leader. I knew him very well, since he worked at the town's power plant, where I recently had found a job. I hoped for a glance from him, but he seemed to be too busy. He did not seem to see anyone, and certainly not me. That was actually the big day. It was mid-September 1939. For Mr. Pincus and his comrades, the day they made history. Whether or not it was their best day, I do not know. The day was hardly over when the Russians on the edge of town moved their trucks eastward, and the world of Abraham Pincus and comrades fell apart completely. Instantly the Polish cavalry appeared, accompanied by anti-Semites of all kinds, who took over the city and the chaos began once again. Old scores were to be settled. With the Russians, the new communist leaders also left, using any available means of transportation for their trek eastward. Those who recently had been imprisoned were set free. Many Jews hid once more, while the Polish cavalry commanded the town once more. They looted, shot, and attacked Jews, and waged the war which they intended to fight against the Germans, against us, with their horses and sabres. As a young and curious person, I always found myself in the middle of the action. After the recent turn of events, I managed to reach home, my parents' house, only with great effort and skill. From far away I could see that the door and shutters on the side street of the house were locked. No one heard me as I knocked and shouted in front of the house. All of the neighbouring homes were also closed. I quickly ran to the back door and finally was let in. Lying on the floor and under the beds, I found my family terrified. In immediate proximity, we could hear shooting and the banging of rifle butts on our door and shutters. Some shots came into the house. A few minutes later, I heard Polish soldiers, accompanied by a street gang, banging at our back door, the same door through which I had just entered the house. Only one door led to our apartment. Three more led to other Jewish families. From what we could hear, it was clear that they were looking for the communist leader who worked at the power plant. They obviously were referring to Abraham Pinkas. Because the street gang did not know exactly who was meant, they led the soldiers to our house, to me, since I also worked at the same electrical works. It was not difficult to kick the first door open, which led to our neighbor's apartment. Innocently and not expecting anything bad, our neighbor, Sara Kavelblum, a baker's wife, came to the door with a baby in her arms. The Polish soldiers fired immediately, shooting off her right hand. The soldiers and their companions disappeared. For the next 2 years, I saw that woman almost every day with only a stump for an arm. The bullets that hit her, although actually meant for Abraham Pinkas, were in fact, because of a mistaken identity, intended for me. My heart ached every time I saw her. Thus my life had been spared a second time, once again by chance.